Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 4 of Season 4 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com, When Harry Met Sally, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me again today is Jake Kluwitz of many different things, including the most recent Con Air Pod. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
Thank you for having me back, Rob. Happy to always be here to listen to some wet kissing noises.
Again, this is another minute which doesn't have that much dialogue or that much dialogue that really matters, but it helps tell us who these people are. I guess you can say that. So the minute four begins with the camera spinning around these lovers and ends with Sally smiling widely but mischievously. So yesterday we ended things with these two characters who in the movie we haven't been introduced to, but in the script we were introduced to them, just smooching away. And I think that Rob Reiner made a good call to just use the camera shots here, and have the camera swing around them. And I love the way, because when it swings around them, it gets to the 360, and then we see a car show up.
Yep.
It's done really smoothly and whatever. Now, I first want to talk about the last 4 days. We've had this background music that's been playing in the back. In this minute, it's still there, and we actually get to hear a lot of the words of the song this time also. But I'm assuming you know what song it is, don't you?
It's It Had to Be You, right?
It is a song called It Had to Be You.
Yeah.
No, sorry, it's not.
No?
Oh. No.
No, I don't know.
No. This is a song. No, it's a song called Love Is Here to Stay.
Oh, okay.
Love Is Here to Stay, which was written by the Gershwins in 1938 for the movie The Goldwyn Follies. By George and Ira Gershwin. Okay. The first person to actually perform it is someone named Kenny Baker, but I don't think it's Kenny Baker that we think of.
No, it's he's not recording it inside a little tin can.
No. It's a different Kenny Baker who performed it in the aforementioned movie The Goldwyn Follies, but it is also very popularly sung by Gene Kelly in the movie In American in Paris. From 1951. It also appeared in the movie Forget Paris, which also stars Billy Crystal. It was in Manhattan with Woody Allen. And you can then hear it in this movie, sung by Harry Connick Jr. But at this point...
Connick Jr.
Yes. But the song has had so many people that have sung it over the years. You have later on in the movie, we will have it sung by Harry Connick Jr., but at this point, it's not Harry Connick Jr. singing it. It is someone else. We have Frank Sinatra sung it, Ella Fitzgerald, and Louis Armstrong. This is the version that we get, the Louis Armstrong version. Billie Holiday sung it, Dinah Washington, Pat Boone, and Shirley Boone, and Nat King Cole. And Alan Sherman did a parody of it called Your Mother's Here to Stay.
So I'm assuming you're reading down the Wikipedia page.
Of course I am.
People, yes. So you skipped over one. You skipped over Bradley Walsh singing it.
I didn't know who Bradley Walsh was. No, I didn't know who he was, which is why
Bradley
I skipped
Walsh
it.
is a TV presenter in the UK who's also been in some of the more recent series of Doctor Who as the Doctor's companion in the Jodie Whittaker seasons.
Okay.
But he hosts like Blankety Blank in the UK and a bunch of other like terrible daytime TV shows, and it's just like, wait, Bradley Walsh has an album? I love finding out that actors or presenters have albums, like have a singing career. We talked about this recently on Con Air, I believe, when you were a guest recently.
Yes, we did.
When in a situation I had to bring up, Vinnie Jones has an album called Respect. It's fantastic. It's delightful. He sings the likes of Mack the Knife. And those kind of classic American standards. But yeah, Bradley Walsh, I now have to go and find this album. Bradley Walsh's son.
Yeah, I skipped it because I didn't know who Bradley Walsh was. I figured, okay, I'm not gonna just say Bradley Walsh, and then
why would you know who Bradley Walsh is?
That's right. I had no idea who it was.
Chasing Dreams is the album. I will be looking for that on Apple Music later on today, and irritating my wife with it, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not going to go through all the lyrics of this song, but I love the way. I mean, the whole idea here is that, you know, that of the song is that love will stand the test of time. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, it talks about the Rockies and Gibraltar. You know, that they're going to crumble or tumble, and you know, because they're only made of clay, but our love is still here to stay. And they talk about how, you know, radio and telephones and the movies that we know may just be passing fancies, and in time must go, or in time may go. So I just find it really great that, you know, this song is showing Amanda and Harry kissing and talking about the fact that this love is going to stay, which anyone who's seen the movie knows that this is the last time we see Amanda. She's mentioned, but we never see her again. And presumably Harry doesn't either.
Yeah. Well, do you think they never see each other again?
Yeah.
Not at all?
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. Because again, he's moving to New York. You know, he's thousands of miles away.
18 hours away.
Okay, we'll get to that point.
That's tomorrow, yeah.
That is not a true point, but we will talk about that tomorrow, about why that is not a true point, but whatever. But yeah, that maybe they get together at one point, maybe, but not in the movie.
There we go.
I mean, yeah. Harry eventually says that they didn't, you know, it didn't work out because of this trip.
Well, it's not called When Harry Met Amanda.
Because he already met her.
Yeah.
It's when Harry left.
The film already started.
That's right.
When Harry left, Amanda could have worked.
Right. But I just find it ironic that this song is playing, you know, while they're showing the two of them. But then, you know, we'll soon get a shot of Sally, you know, with Harry. So maybe that's part of the whole connection here, that this is, you know, this friendship and budding love story between the two of them, you know, which is basically what this movie is all about. So we were talking about the 360 of the camera. And then we see a yellow Toyota Corona wagon. That's a great name, especially in these days with COVID. Yep. You know, it's a 1976 Toyota Corona, which if you wanted to buy one today would cost you about $4,000.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Exactly. You checked that up too?
No, it doesn't look like a very good car.
Think about it. It's a you know, she's a recent college graduate. She's not going to have thousands of dollars to buy a car.
It makes sense, you know, that this is the car she's driving.
Yeah.
It also makes sense it would only cost $4,000 today.
Right.
Is it both things that make sense?
That's right. I mean, it's a car that's almost 50 years old. What do you expect?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and first of all, I love the fact that she has a steamer trunk, you know, attached to the top of this car.
Yeah, okay. So no one can trip over it in the middle of the road.
That is correct. But they're not in New York yet. You know, that's the irony. It's the opposite direction between planes, trains, and automobiles. From here, they're going from Chicago to New York. And in PTA, they were going from New York to Chicago.
Yeah, but on a much less – this is a much less tumultuous journey.
Yes. I guess going east is easier than going west.
And also, it helps that it's not during a storm.
Yes.
Over Thanksgiving.
Right. Well, it's assumed that this is probably late June.
Yeah.
You know, they just finished. They just graduated. They just finished the, you know, college, and they're ready to move on. Now, according to what we read yesterday in the script, so apparently, you know, Harry has just finished law school, so he's actually more than just finished college. You know, he's also finished graduate school beyond that.
But is that the case in the film? Because doesn't he?
They never mention the fact that he's a lawyer.
Because I think,
he's a consultant.
Okay, so he could be a lawyer. Okay.
It's possible that he's a lawyer. Exactly. They don't go into the fact of that he has a law degree in the movie.
Okay. Fair enough.
And I believe, if I remember correctly, that she's a journalist.
So if this is June-ish 1977, have they seen Star Wars?
My assumption is that Sally probably has not.
I agree.
Okay.
Harry, because it came out May 25th.
Harry, let's put it this way. Harry probably went and saw Star Wars with Amanda, but he probably wasn't looking at the screen at all. That's what I would guess.
So he's not a true fan.
Probably not. Probably not. He's got a much darker side to him.
True. Okay.
So that would be my guess. You know, what would you think?
I would agree, yes. The only way that Sally would have seen it would have been dragged along on a date with somebody else, I think.
Wait, once again, Sheldon might have taken her. You never know.
Sheldon would definitely.
Shel Gordon go see sounds like the guy who would take her to go see a Star Wars movie.
Absolutely. Yes, I can see that happening. So yes, she may well have read a book during it. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. She doesn't seem like the type of person who would enjoy it. Even though later on we know that she has an extensive movie collection, you know, which is nice to see, and she has them all alphabetized, you know, on index cards.
Yeah.
Which is something
like
that I did
also. Like a
normal
person.
I did that as a kid also. I had them all in index cards. Yes. And it was probably before I saw this movie that I was even doing that. You know, I don't think this movie gave me the idea to do that. But, you know, now I don't have them on index cards. Because I just use digital media. But whatever. That's a separate issue. Which we won't go into. Don't need to talk about that.
Let's talk about Meg Ryan's hair.
Well, no, we'll get there. We'll get there. I don't want to talk about. First, I want to talk about the trunk. Okay. So, first of all, the fact that the trunk is on the roof says a few things. First of all,
allows space for Harry to have his luggage in the back.
But also that she doesn't have that much she doesn't have that much room in the back.
Why?
You know.
I read it as. She knows that
she's being considerate. You're saying,
yeah, she knows she's going to pick up Harry. He's not going to want it. Like she's going to have time. She's a prepared person. She's planned. She's going to have been ready an hour before she needed to be. So in that time, she's got time to strap her own luggage on the top of on the roof of the car, pack things in the car. So in such a way that he can just chuck his stuff in and go.
Right. I mean, it is packed. I mean, she has four different ropes. You know, holding this trunk down, bungee cords, exactly, yeah. Holding it down. But I was starting to, and we didn't do this on Plane Shooters on one of those. I don't know why, but I didn't talk about what a steamer trunk is. You know, we never got there.
I assumed you would have done. I know I've listened to the show, but I assumed that was covered.
No, it wasn't. So, but well, don't worry, we're not going to go into it. I found like 20 different types of trunks, but we're not going to talk about all of those. We're just going to talk about the steamer trunk. So where do you think this name of a steamer trunk came from, and when?
My guess would be something to do with steamer ships that were used to keep things on steamships. Like they kept them in a trunk and they stacked nicely. I don't know.
No, you're right, Jay.
Yeah.
You're right.
It's from a steamer trunk. When would and be the age of steamer ships, which would be the 1920s. I don't know. When was Huckleberry Finn around?
Huckleberry Finn was a lot earlier.
1870.
Huckleberry Finn was like 1830s, 1840s.
Oh, Christ.
Something like
okay.
that. Yeah. If I remember correctly.
It's been a long time.
Yeah. So one of the things is they're also referred to as flat tops. And people started using them in steamer ships in the 1870s, and part of it was because they were able to stack them much easier. Okay, they're usually covered in canvas, leather, or patterned paper, and they accommodate the steamship luggage regulations. Okay, but one of the things that have you ever I probably asked you this back then. Because we did have a steamer trunk in the first week of Planes, Trains, Automobiles. But have you ever used a steamer trunk? Have you ever had one?
I don't think you did, and no, I have not. I don't think I've ever encountered one in my travels. It seems like I've had suitcases, I've had backpacks, I've had duffel bags, I've had holds, but a steamer trunk, no.
Right. So one of the things about the steamer trunk is when you open it, so it has room to...
Steam comes out.
No. It has room to like little like spaces for storage of different types of things.
Okay. You know,
like different pockets for that are different sizes that can be used for things. Okay. And it's sometimes called a cabin trunk or called a packer trunk. But most people still just refer to it as steamer trunk because that's what you know, that's what it's always been known as. So it started out in the 1870s, and it was mostly used on steamers up until the 1920s. Okay, so you were very close. You said 1920, so there you go. Yeah. You get credit for that, Jay.
Hooray, I guess.
I'll give you credit on IMDb for that one. but it is also a true steamer trunk. People refer to as cabin trunk. Okay, which are the this is basically a cabin trunk. It's not a true steamer trunk with what right. it is. And they are small enough to fit in the berths of trains or in the cabin of a steamer, which is why they still use them there. And they have inner tray compartments that you can store different types of valuables deemed too precious to keep stowed away in the baggage car of the ship's hold. Okay, and it's something that has been used. It's used quite often when people go away to camp. You know, those are the type of trunks that people at least used to use. I don't know if they still use them these days.
But I never went to camp for that long. So.
Right. Right. I went to summer camp, I think I went like 4 years or 5 years, something like that. And I had one of these, which I probably mentioned 2 years ago, two seasons ago when we were talking about this, but still. So, yeah, that's what I have to say about steamer trunks. So you wanted to talk about the hairstyles. So go ahead, Jay.
There's so many curls. It's so much hair. I wasn't around in the 70s. I was barely around in the 80s. But this is a kind of a Charlie's Angels kind of look.
Very close. You're very close. It was the Ferret Fossa look.
Ferret Fossa. Who was in
Charlie's Angels. Yes, she was.
It just looks silly. I think it's a silly hairstyle. but again, that's coming from someone who was born in 87's perspective.
Okay, but you probably think that everything that was around in the 70s was just crazy. So, you know,
yes.
Still the same.
Yes,
all right, there you go. Because your perspective is very different on it. I was 6 when the 70s ended, so I can't really say I remember that much from the fashion styles of the 70s. But, you know, I was always familiar with the fact of the Farrah Fawcett look. You know, the feather look, you know, the feather hair look type of thing. And so Farrah Fawcett was an actress. She was born on February 2nd, 1947, and passed away on June 25th, 2009. Her full name was Farrah Leany Fawcett. Okay, she's mostly known for being on just the first season of the TV show Charlie's Angels. You know, she was on the TV show The $6 Million Man. She was on another TV show called Harry O. She was married to Lee Majors, which is why she was in The $6 Million Man. You know, her husband. She was on Charlie's Angels with Kate Jackson and Jacqueline Smith. They were the other two angels that were on during that first season with her. She left the show, and she started doing off-Broadway plays. She did TV movies. She even got an Emmy nomination for her role as a battered wife in the movie called The Burning Bed in 1984. And she also played a murderer named Diane Downs in a movie called Small Sacrifices, which also earned her an Emmy nomination. She wasn't really in that many movies after that. She was in some here and there. She was in The Cannonball Run. You ever see Cannonball Run?
That's the one that I've seen that she was right. in.
Yeah, and she
For some
was.
Reason, I remember her part. I can't think why. I don't know what it is.
Wasn't she one of the two female racers? Yeah,
with Adrian Barbeau, I think was the other one.
Yeah. Correct. And so she was diagnosed with cancer in 2006. And she passed away 3 years later at the age of 62 from that. And in 2009, there was a documentary that chronicled her disease called Farrah's Story. And she actually was nominated for an Emmy as a producer after she passed away for that, but unfortunately didn't win. So yeah, that's the hairstyle. That's the way it was back in the 70s. You know, it makes a lot of sense that Sally would have this type of hairstyle. You know, she definitely goes with the flow and does, you know, she wants to fit in. She's someone who wants to fit in even though she knows she can't fit in. I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I can kind of agree with that, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel like, yeah.
Right. Now, first of all, I love the fact that she like parks the car and she just starts staring at them in a very interesting way. You know, like it looks as if she's somewhat jealous. You know, that Amanda has someone that she can, part ways with so difficultly, I guess you could say.
Yeah, there's a lot of passion going yes. on in the parting of Harry and Amanda,
yeah.
which is maybe something that's been missing in her life, perhaps.
Correct. Even with Sheldon, Michelle Gordon. And, like, she just...
So there's also irritation. She's also just kind of like...
Well, no, it starts off that she's looking at them, and then we get a close-up, and we can see that she's starting to get a little uncomfortable, that she's sitting here waiting, because part of it is, if someone who hasn't seen this movie before is going to wonder why she's getting a little agitated, maybe because... You know, maybe she's feeling uncomfortable about them or something like that. But yeah. Since anyone who's seen the movie knows who Sally Albright is, she's actually, on a timetable. And that's what's bothering her.
She has a schedule.
She has to leave by a certain time, and this is taking too much time. This smooching, it's not necessary. Just let's move on. This
kissing is not in the schedule.
That's right. And, then we get a little shot of her and then she's debating what to do. And she's looking at them, and she's looking back and forth, and sees them kissing, and then she decides to just clear her throat, and nothing happens. She sees that they didn't do it, so she does it a second time, much louder. And at this point, you see Amanda and Harry are startled. I guess they were just oblivious to the fact that there were people around them, or anything.
They're in public.
In public, exactly. In the middle of the University of Chicago. And then they both look over at the screen, at Sally, obviously. And then Amanda starts talking. She says, "Oh, hi, Sally. Sally, this is Harry Burns. Harry, this is Sally Albright." And then, Harry moves a little closer and says, "Nice to meet you." And right away, Sally doesn't mince words. She just goes, "You want to drive the first shift?" Which is really nice for her to be saying that, but why? Like, what is it? Is it like to try and be chivalrous and let the man, be the first one to drive?
I guess she probably is in a position where she doesn't mind if she drives first or second, whereas Harry might mind. He might say, "Oh, it just gives him the option," I guess. Although his response of "No, you're already there," I see that as. I feel like he should have said, "Yes, I'll do it." Like, from a 70s chivalry perspective.
Right. Exactly.
It should be like, "Yes, yes, woman, step aside."
I think they're trying to show that Harry doesn't really care.
That's it. And him saying, "Oh, no, you're there already."
He's apathetic.
It's the easiest option for him.
That's right.
Speaking of going with the flow, he's like, "Yeah, let's just get on with it."
Right.
I think he'd be more than happy to be a passenger the whole way. Which
that's right.
I would too.
I hate driving. I don't want to drive. The thing is, I'm the opposite. I love driving. As from my tales of when I was in America, how much I drove. I don't mind. That doesn't bother me at all. It doesn't tire me out. Whatever.
I recently came back from Scotland. We drove back. Well, I'm on the south coast of the UK. We drove back the whole way, whole trip in one go. And I did none of the driving. My wife drove the whole way.
how many hours was that?
We were driving for about nine and a half. But then there were stops throughout the day for all the dogs, etc. But I did offer to drive, but I'm not a good driver. She's a much better driver than me. I did drive some of the journey going up, but only for like an hour and a half.
Well, it's because you guys drive on the wrong side of the road.
When we did go to Canada for a honeymoon, my wife did forget which side of the road she's supposed to be driving on. So that was fun.
like, have you ever seen LA Story?
Yes. Yeah.
So Victoria Tennant, in every single scene when she's driving, goes to the wrong side of the road.
No, she's driving on the correct side of the road. Everyone else is on the wrong side of the road.
Apparently. You are correct, Jay. You are correct. And, then Sally says to him, "Well, back's open." And then we see Harry start walking towards the back. Do you see what he's carrying?
It's the total thing, isn't it? The duffel bag.
Yes. So he has a duffel bag, and he is holding something. He has something else.
I didn't see the something else. I'm not skipping ahead to next to tomorrow. What else is he holding?
Okay, he has a baseball bat.
Okay.
And a duffel bag. And there is something else that we will get to. We'll try to figure out what it is. Who knows? You never know. And at this point,
more kissing ensues.
Yes. You know, they finished with their little chit chat. And, you know, they're right now. See, actually, we'll talk about this tomorrow. We'll talk about what they're taking with them, because it bothers me that this is, you know, they're making a big change in life, and you see what Harry takes with him and what Sally takes with him. We'll get to that tomorrow. Tomorrow we get a little bit more of a shot.
What I find interesting about this minute, we first meet Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Kissing Amanda, and then Sally arrives. But the first person who we see being annoyed and we kind of empathize with, I guess, is Sally.
Right.
I find it interesting whose perspective we kind of follow as we go through the film, as like who you're supposed to kind of root for, who you're empathizing with in scene to scene, and whether that changes from person to person. Whether there are people who would watch this scene and go like, "Yeah, I'm on Harry's side here. He's trying to say goodbye to his girlfriend, whereas Sally's on a schedule." For me, I'm much more of a Sally's on a schedule. I'm
employed. Exactly. With her. She's trying to get understand someone. That.
I'm a spreadsheet guy.
I understand. I have
places to go and things to do. And he's just—they've already kissed once. They've said, "Get in the car. Let's go." So I just find it interesting to. Whose perspective we see at any given moment, and whether it's more Harry than Sally towards the end, or more Sally than Harry, if it's exactly 50-50, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to follow along.
Yeah, I'm not going to do how deep in blue this movie is, you know, by trying to figure out, you know,
you're not committed in each to minute, film, I guess.
Apparently not. In each minute, you know, how much do we empathize with Sally, and how much do we empathize with Harry. I don't know about that. But if you want to do that, you know, on the sidelines, you're more than welcome, Jay. I will gladly accept, you know, you can every day send me on Facebook, you know, your percentage of how the breakdown is between Harry and Sam.
Maybe I'll have to, I don't know, come back for a minute towards the end of the film and give you an update.
I'll see how the rest of this week goes, but maybe. Yeah. We'll see. And then the two of them start kissing again and start talking again. Call me.
And then he says,
I'll call you as soon as I get there. No, call me from the road. I'll call you even before that. I love you. You know, it's a Barney. They're doing Barney songs, you know, and then it's just great because we see the look on Sally's face. She is just, she's like, again? I can't believe this. I thought I convinced them to stop, you know, and they're continuing. What is this? And then she like honks the horn. It's just like, great. It's completely annoying the way that.
And she doesn't play it off with like, oh, sorry, I accidentally beeped the horn. It's very much a leaning on the horn until That's they right. stop and then giving them a big old grin.
That's right.
Which I don't. The big grin is odd, like, because it's not even like a. You said mischievous. I don't see it as mischievous. I just see it as like, I'm happy. It's a happy grin. It's I beat the horn. I'm smiling.
It's like I don't know. Maybe mischievous isn't the right word, but it's you know, she's trying to break them up from you know, she wants to get them moving.
She wants to get on the road.
That's right. So it's somewhat mischievous from that perspective, even though she's. You know, she's got this big, bright smile on her face, the way that she does it. I don't know. We'll talk a little bit more about it because, you know, we'll get into more honking tomorrow. So, you have anything else you want to say before we get into the script?
No, I think we covered it.
Okay. So, again, the script has a few little descriptive aspects of it that are great. First of all, it says, driving the car is Sally Albright. She's 21 years old. She's very pretty, although not necessarily in an obvious way. She sits there waiting for the kiss to end. It doesn't end. She clears her throat. They don't hear her. She shifts position and accidentally on purpose hits the car horn, which beeps and startles Amanda and Harry into breaking off their clinch. And then they have the little conversation between them, and And then, you know, she still asks him if he wants to drive the first shift, and he goes, "No, you're already there." And then it's a, then it starts talking about the stuff that he takes with him. It says Harry starts to put his stuff in the car, a duffel bag, a box of records, into the back seat of the car, where Sally's stuff is too: suitcases, stereo speakers, a guitar, boxes of books, and a small TV. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow when we can actually see more of a view of what's in the car itself. And then, you know, they start again with the I love yous and says the kiss again, and then Sally sits waiting. She hits the car horn again. Harry and Amanda break apart. And she goes, sorry.
So, tomorrow.
Yes. But, you know, she hits the horn today. So, all right, so she doesn't say sorry yet. I know it's fine. So every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Dating / Courting Edition, where my guest will give a little story about some sort of adventure, misadventure, something that happened to them during the course of their lives that is somewhat related to dating or courting, which is obviously the main theme of this movie. So, Jay, you have another story for us?
So on Tuesday I mentioned I might talk about my wedding, but I kind of thought about it. It's not really a story, that is, the day kind of just went really well. But instead I'm going to talk about a something that happened whilst my wife and I were dating. That's so I moved before we started dating. I moved out of my parents' house, moved into my own flat for the first time. It was a flat in a shed building, a converted building. It used to be a school or something, I don't know. And I had a ground floor flat. And the day I moved in was also the day I met the neighbor across the hall. So we're moving in. My parents are helping out. We're moving stuff in. And she came out. Her name is Candy. She was, I would say, in her early... She apparently turned 50 at some point during the following year, but I would say she was in her early to mid-50s. And she came out to introduce herself wearing a towel because she had been in the shower, having a shower, heard people were moving in, and so got out of the shower, wrapped herself in a towel, and said hello, which I think, odd behavior.
It sounds like something. You're giving like a story, so, you know, like someone sending, you know, to penthouse letters or something like that.
It is.
This is where the story seems to be going, Jay.
I mean, yes, it could have gone that way. It did not. I think one.
I happened to get there, and my new neighbor named Candy across the way came out.
She used to be a dancer. She told me she used to be a dancer, but there was no attraction from my side at all ever. But she introduced herself as Candy. My brother-in-law at the time was, we had a big laugh about the whole thing because it seemed very obvious what kind of a person that she was. But anyway, a few days go by. She eventually went away, went back into her apartment and got dressed, I assume, I hope. I go to work, come home from work one day. The flooring in my kitchen needed to be redone by the landlord. And so I'd said, oh, it's fine to come around and do that one day. And so I come home. Come into my flat. Candy is in there. She's in my flat. Because the flooring guy is there, and he's done my flooring. Turns out they're old friends, because he comes and does all of the maintenance for the house. And when I'd left for work that morning, I was in a bit of a rush. I left the kind of the bedroom area a bit of a mess. She had made my bed for me.
Interesting.
Tidied up a little bit. She was having a good chat. We had a little chat. I'd kind of, the day we first met, the first exchange we had, she was like, hi, I'm Ken. He's like, oh, hi, I'm Jason. Her immediate response back was, oh, I remember that name. It's my ex-husband's name is Jason. And I was like, oh my God, red flag. So she'd make my bed. She's like in my flat. She kept on knocking on the door and asking for help. But sometimes when my wife and I started dating, we were having a date. My wife was around. We were watching a film or something. She knocks on the door. She needed help fixing her computer. And so I had to like go around and fix and like interrupt this date to go and like do it. I hate saying no to people. I'm just not good at saying like if people. Anyway, eventually she like invited us to her 50th air quotes birthday party. But we didn't go. We moved out without saying goodbye. We ran away from her as well as we could. And then a few months after moving out, I saw her in a supermarket and ran the other way and hid.
Oh, wow.
I've never seen her since. So there's not much of a story to this. It's just kind of this is an interaction I had that could have become a romantic interaction, but I'm grateful that it did not.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, just it's just the coming home from work and she's just in my flat. She's just there, having made my bed.
Sounds a bit strange.
It wasn't the worst part of living in that building. I won't go into that, but I had some other very terrible neighbours, so I didn't stay there very long. I couldn't control my heating. My neighbours were able to control my heating. And they liked it very hot all the time, and I didn't. It was a very odd situation in that house.
All right, well, yeah, if we ever want stories about strange apartments, I know where to go.
If you have a season where the off-beaten track is housing horror stories, I could be there every week for that. I got a bunch of those.
Yeah, I've got some of those too. Yeah,
fun places. I'm sure everyone has housing horror stories. I don't know how many true. People have had people die in the place they live before, but there we go.
Oh wow, you've had people die in your apartment?
I've moved into somewhere where there's been blood on the walls and a bloody knife out the window.
Fun.
So you need to find a house centric film for you to cover. Hear those stories.
All right, I'll have to rack my brain on that.
Cover the money pit.
No, I don't think so. I'm not the biggest fan of that movie.
No, me neither.
All right, so Jay, you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
So my personal website is lifeversusfilm.com. It's my own little blog. Not a lot happens there these days, but it's where I started out. It's where I've been. My aim was to cover all of the films on the 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die list. I am a little under halfway through, and that gets less and less as the years go on. They keep releasing new books. But that is where you can find all the reviews I've ever written for every film everywhere, lifeversusfilm.com. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, that is at lifeversusfilm, life vs film. Or you can follow my podcasts at Deep Blue Sea Pod or at Con Air Pod. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, which is for Deep Blue Sea the podcast and Con Air the podcast, as previously plugged in earlier minutes this week.
All right, great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, or you can go directly to my website, movearoundminute.com. So, Jay, you feel like coming back again tomorrow to finish off this week?
I'd love to, Rob.
All right. Well, until then, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
Gave me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.